understand. Statutory requirements.
But you heard about
my
meltdown.
Oh, I'm okay. I'm melting down. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Board of Public Works. What is today?
January 5th.
Today is January 5th, 2011. Mr. Comptroller, it's great to see you.
Great to
I understand
see you.
We have a distinguished guest in the gallery today. Who might
yes.
that be?
Well, I'd like to welcome again my dad, Doug Francho, who's here from Cleveland. Governor, I highly recommend a movie I took Dad to last night called The King's Speech. I don't know if other people have seen it, but it's a marvelous production. Oh, it's just
tell me about it.
Perfect. Well, I took Dad because he was a Navy pilot during World War II, and this movie is set in the years leading up to World War II and a little bit of World War II, and it really showed the incredible scale of that great generation that Dad is part of. But one of the big scenes in the movie is the fact that the King of England, King Edward, abdicates his throne for the love of his life, who's an American divorcee.
From Baltimore.
Yeah. And this was obviously caused major consternation in England, but there's one scene in the movie where Churchill is speaking to the next king, King George VI, the movie is really about, and explaining to him that his older brother had to abdicate as the head of the church in England, et cetera, et cetera. And he said, because it was about Wallace Simpson, and he said, well, it's just completely unacceptable that you have Queen Wallace of Baltimore. And I thought to myself, that sounds pretty good to me. But it's a marvelous movie, and Dad loved the theatrical production, but also the time that it was set in, that your dad and so many of our dads were part of. So thank you for letting me recognize. So Dad, maybe we'll get a picture afterwards with Dad, and if I'd be honored if the treasurer and the governor could have a picture with us.
Absolutely. It's a poor governor can't afford a picture. As Eloise looks back at me. Treasurer Kopp, any thoughts?
Well,
you got movies?
No, but that's one movie I actually would really like to see. It's a very inspiring story, and I like Colin Firth, so
yes.
There you are.
You're a lot of company.
Yes. No, except we do have an item on the board agenda that we will get to relatively soon about the cops. Not the cops, but the certificates of participation for our slot machines. I don't remember the nice word for them. But aside from that, no, it's good to be back. I was in Amsterdam visiting two little children, my 3.5-month-old grandchildren. If anyone wants to see pictures, they're readily available. But it's very good to be back. I know this is going to be a very difficult and very challenging year, but I am very, very impressed by the spirit of collaboration and understanding that I've seen not only in the treasurer's office but across the state. And I know we're going to get through it, and we're going to get through it with our priorities intact and our vision clear for the future. And I look forward to continuing to work in the new year.
Thanks, Madam Treasurer. Mr. Comptroller?
I just want to echo what the Treasurer said, because obviously we don't have the federal stimulus dollars like we've had in years gone by, but the revenues have stabilized. I think that's the best slant we can put on it. And they're going to slowly recover, but this year is going to be a year that tests everybody. in the state, and obviously we're resilient economically in Maryland. We've got all these life sciences that we value so much. We have these great centers of higher learning. We have our wonderful independent businesses in, around the state. But most of all, we have experienced leadership, Governor, with you. You've gone through this. The legislative leadership is tested. We have a tremendous workforce of state employees. I know the vogue these days is to be skeptical about public employment. Well, we have a tremendous group of people that work for us in the state. We've got our AAA bond rating. We've got a proven record. I think we've got leadership, particularly with the governor, who exemplifies that spirit of optimism that's going to move us forward. We're going to continue, obviously, to make sure the taxpayer dollars are spent carefully, and we're going to try to get the entire state and everybody to work together to realize that fiscal responsibility has to be part of social responsibility. So I'm delighted to be here at the start of the new year with both of you, Madam Treasurer and Governor, and look forward to working with everybody and hope everyone continues to have the safe and prosperous time with their family and friends that obviously we're just coming off of for this wonderful holiday.
Governor, I'm sure you're going to say something, but let me just get one word in. First of all, it's very nice to see Mr. Schwingler, Mr. Secretary. It's a great pleasure.
Welcome back.
You, I understand there's an announcement to be made, and so I'm not going to say it, except to say that I don't know anyone who has been a more hardworking, inspiring leader in really tough times than John Comer's. And we're going to I wish you well, but miss you greatly. There are a lot of things that we did because we knew that you had looked at it and you share the vision and priorities, and you have suffered through what had to be done. And I just want you to know that it's recognized by many people and appreciated deeply by them.
Hear, hear. John Comer's, ladies and gentlemen. And John, we'll do, hopefully be another time when we can more properly thank you for everything you've done over these last 4 years.
He's not.
Before we came out here, we were talking about, I shared with Treasurer Kopp that I had seen with my son the new remake of the movie True Grit. And I said the last scene reminded me of Comer's for some reason. As they rode the horse, old Blackie, into the ground. But I really do appreciate, John, your professionalism. And most important, what a lot of people don't see as we meet and go over how it is we were able to pull another $300 million out of a budget where that's down to the bone and cutting into the marrow, as one recent comment read from one labor leader, rightly. The amount of compassion that you brought to the job, that given all of the difficulty, it would have probably been easier from a personal standpoint not to keep yourself open to the suffering and the impact that these cuts have on some of the most vulnerable among us, but you never ever jettisoned that compassion or became callous or created a defensive shell, and I really appreciate it. What a lot of people never saw, and we've heard a lot about the closing of Rosewood. Each one of those families were people that John met with personally, and he tracked their trajectory through that in a very scary time for their family and very vulnerable people that they love. And that's something invaluable that you've given to us over these last 4 years, John. And I, as your friend and as your fellow citizen, really thank you for that. No price tag can ever be put on that gift. So thank you. You want to say anything in response? I mean, because stand up. Come on, man.
I am blushing. I'm not used to getting these compliments. Thank you so much for your kind comments.
It begins, first of all, Governor, with my thanks to you for giving me the opportunity and having the trust in me that almost 4 years ago when we started on this journey together, your leadership has just been outstanding, and that of the Lieutenant Governor, and being able to advance health care in this state. You are one of the very few governors in the country where health care has really been a high priority, and even in difficult times, you've allowed me the flexibility and the backup to get a lot of things done. And Rosewood is certainly a hard decision, but we did a lot of really, really good things that will have a lasting impact on the health of many, many millions of Marylanders for years to come, and I'm grateful for that. I'm also grateful to this board for the support that you've given the department and will continue to give the department in the years ahead. These are complicated times, and you've been able to wrestle with us on those decisions. We haven't always agreed. We've never been disagreeable, and I think that is a testament to the way in which we here in Maryland get things done, and I'm very grateful to it. And I cannot end here without saying something wonderful about my colleagues on the cabinet, beginning with Eloise, most importantly, and others, but also the great people within the department. People are saying nice things about me today, and I'm grateful for it, but I know that almost all of that is because of the hard work and dedication of the thousands of people within the Department of Health and Mental Hygiene, from those who are providing direct care in facilities to those who are processing Medicaid claims, to those who are in the field in public health. They are the ones that get the work done, and they are true professionals working through very difficult times and yet have not lost sight of that, the goal of serving their fellow citizens. So, again, thank you very much for this opportunity.
Thank you.
We also have one other important, as we talk about public service, Elliot Schlanger, we're glad, two more things. Elliot, we're glad to see you back after your exploration of the healthcare system of the state of Maryland. We're happy to have you back. Makes the IT challenges look like wonderful things to tackle, doesn't it? Well, we're glad you're back. And today, later on this morning, I believe, this afternoon, Senator Barbara Mikulski will be sworn in, making her the longest-serving woman ever to serve in the history of the United States Senate. And so this is going to be an exciting and historic day, and all of us who've had the honor, the pleasure to work with her and to campaign alongside her are happy for her accomplishment. I wanted to read to you this just by way of tribute. I like this one. I think of her on this one. This is by Jack Gilbert, and it's a poem called The Abnormal Is Not Courage. Now, it's a very short poem. We're going to go right after this to the president of St. Mary's, appropriately enough. But this is by Jack Gilbert. And it's real short. It goes like this. The Poles rode out from Warsaw against the German tanks on horses. Rode knowing in sunlight with sabers, a magnitude of beauty that allows me no peace. And yet this poem would lessen that day. Question the bravery. Say it's not courage. Call it a passion. Would say courage isn't that. Not at its best. It was impossible. And with form. They rode in sunlight, were mangled. But I say courage is not the abnormal, not the marvelous act, not Macbeth with fine speeches, the worthless can manage in public or for the moment, not the marvelous act, but the evident conclusion of being, not strangeness, but a leap forward of the same quality, accomplishment, the even loyalty, but fresh, not the prodigal son nor Faustus, but Penelope, the thing steady and clear, then the crescendo, the real form, the culmination, and the exceeding, not the surprise, the amazed understanding, the marriage, not the month's rapture, not the exception, the beauty that is of many days, steady and clear, it is the normal excellence of long accomplishment. So with that, we go to Dr. Ergo from St. Mary's. Come on up, doctor. I understand this is a tradition.
A tradition. I'm humbled by the level of discourse here this morning. Over the break, the only movie I saw was with my nieces and nephews who went to see Yogi Bear. I do also recommend for the other generation that's coming up. It's a great privilege to serve as the president of St. Mary's College in Maryland. Over the last 6 months, my first 6 months on the job, I've received many congratulatory emails and telephone calls from presidential colleagues around the country, all of whom expressed intense admiration for our college and for the level of state support for St. Mary's College, one of the very few public honors colleges in the country. So it is my privilege to serve, to thank this group for supporting us. I do know that my last 6 months have gone well because this morning my colleagues from St. Mary's College led me down some alleyways and pathways to an office where they gave me a badge. So I now be able to enter this building without a lot of hassles and so forth. But as I can tell you, I have enjoyed these last 6 months. St. Mary's College is a remarkable institution. I knew that before I came, but I've learned it even more deeply from being here for the last 6 months, meeting not only those who are working there, but our graduates, and I hope all of you must know many of our graduates around the state and the county and the region who do such good work for us. So it is a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's good to have you. And I understand you have an agenda item today, too, as well. Huh?
We do. We are committed to various levels of green activities and responsible shepherding of our resources. We are in great need of a new building for our philosophy and religious studies programs. Rather than ask you to have us build one, we're simply asking you to have us take an old building and move it across the street. We're going to serve that purpose as a recycled building. And you'll see that, I think, is item number 10 on the agenda.
Great.
Well, makes sense to me.
Well, I understand that the treasurer wants to keep the tradition going. We have some other new university presidents who we've extended invitations to, huh? Yes?
Dr. Lowe
and President
Wilson.
It's important,
Wilson, Governor, for a state, and I know that you share this, and certainly the comptroller, a state that is so dependent on higher education, so interested and so supportive of higher education. There was a time when the leaders of our institution really were not known beyond the confines of academia. But we thought it was really quite important that the people of the state and the other public leaders of the state get to know them, get to recognize the great work that they do, and be able to see the institutions as part of the basic structure of our community and of our economy, and your institution in particular is so unique that I think it's really important that people learn about it. You know, the present system of funding was a creation of the legislature.
I do know that.
Because the legislature at that time had great faith in the ability of a small liberal arts college to maintain its open doors for all our citizens, both new generation college goers and those who come from families that have been involved in higher education for a long time, but also to be able to be a relatively affordable and yet very unusually high caliber small liberal arts college. And I'm glad to see that St. Mary's, like St. John's, but less expensive. Has really thrived.
Well, we certainly pride ourselves in making a liberal arts education accessible to those segments of the society who aren't normally associated with that level of education, and taking the best and the brightest from wherever they happen to be in the state and region, no matter, despite their socioeconomic background, and making that affordable to them. Indeed.
Yeah.
I also, and harking back to your initial comment, do consider the role of a college president to be a public official. So if there's any time you would like to hear from me, you'll certainly hear from me sometimes when you may not be thinking you're going to hear from me. But if you'd like to hear from me, I would be at your service and would be happy to appear.
Tell me about your green initiatives down there, Doctor.
Chip Jackson can speak more specifically to recent projects.
Well, Governor and board, the college, driven as much by our students as by us administrators, have been working hard on a variety of green initiatives, from green buildings, energy performance contracts, but also minor things such as a student farm, to-go boxes in our cafeteria so that students can recycle some of the boxes they use to take food in and out, a broad variety of issues. From an energy standpoint, our green buildings and our energy performance contracts and our just conservation initiatives on different levels, we have reduced our energy consumption by over 25% over the past 3 years and continue to look forward to do that more.
25%?
Yes, sir.
That's great.
Colonel Friedlander tells me you also have a pervious parking lot.
We have a couple pervious parking lots that we've put on campus, and our new projects all will continue to use that technology to reduce stormwater. We have throughout another.
We need a better word for that.
Permeable.
I never know whether it's permeable, impermeable, pervious, or impervious.
Yes, sir.
Well, maybe we should just call them holy parking lots.
That's right. That's right. They drain well.
Holy parking lots, Batman.
That's right. But if I may throw out one other quick fact, in our campus development over the past 15 years, we've reduced stormwater into the St. Mary's River and the Chesapeake Bay by 50% by doing various very stringent stormwater management techniques.
Permeable. Have you put it in one executive summary-like place?
Sir. Absolutely.
Can you get that to me so I can share it with our federal partners? All of the federal entities came together about 6 months ago, led by Secretary Mabus. And, boy, they've got a lot of... impermeable?
Pervious.
Impervious. Asphalt. They got a lot of asphalt all over the place. So it would be... And how expensive was that for you to be able to reduce stormwater runoff by 50% at St. Mary's?
Most of the work has been done through our capital projects, and we believe just by working very hard during design... within the budget constraints.
These are on the new projects.
Under new projects, and under just under the normal budget and project management, you can do these things. It's a challenge. It's hard work, but we feel that we've been able to make good decisions.
I've told people, Governor, all over the state, if they want to get a good hearing with you, lead with permeability.
That's right.
It's, make their parking lots holy. But thank you also for your MBE participation on this project. I see it's 30%, and it's excellent in Southern Maryland. Hats off to you.
One addition, our students have voluntarily taxed themselves on more than one occasion to raise funds for various green projects on campus, voluntarily increasing their fees to put into special funds that we can draw on.
A good generation will do that.
Yes, they will. The next great generation, perhaps.
All right. Thank you. Thanks very, very much, and congratulations. We're glad you're here. We are on the secretary's agenda, as a matter of fact.
Members of the board, there are 11 items total on the secretary's agenda. We just have discussion of item 10, the St. Mary's relocation of the Margaret Brick Hall. You can discuss other items. I know Treasurer Cobb is particularly interested in item 11.
Well, just to point out that item 11 is the certificate of participation, the COPS series 2011A that are being sold to finance the purchase of the video lottery terminals in Perryville and Ocean Downs. We've had things related to this before the board before. This is not a new issue, but... to remind you that the Treasurer's Office set three goals for the financing of these machines. One was the lowest cost of capital for the taxpayers, transparency in the project, and inclusion of minority firms in the financing. And to do that, as I reported to you earlier, we issued an RFI to bankers, advisors, lessors, financial institutions for recommendations on the best financing method. And there was a consensus recommendation on the sale of COPS. COPS, Certificates of Participation, COPS, COPS, are a method of structuring capital leases to attract multiple investors in a public offering. So you've got some degree of competition. They represent a shared right to receive lease payments made by the lessee, in this case the state, under these agreements. And the financing is considered tax-supported debt of the state. It's already worked into the CDAC debt affordability analyses. And it was the consensus that it would be the lowest cost of capital. We notified the legislature and received acquiescence. The decision was made to sell it in a negotiated sale. It was the first time it had been done by Maryland. It is appropriations-based. And it allowed the selection of underwriters, including two minority firms. The ratings are the highest ratings we could expect under an appropriations-backed issue. It's not a general obligation issue. It's not AAA, as our general obligations are, but AA+ from Standard & Poor's and Fitch, and AA1 from Moody's. Which is a very, very good sign indeed. The marketing began, Governor, with they're called roadshows, but they're not roadshows anymore. They're actually interviews via telephone to those who are going to sell and buy them, we hope. And then on the 12th, we are going to undertake the negotiation in a perfectly transparent way. We invite people to listen in. Our financial advisors will be leading us through it, and then we will, after closing, compare it to the AAA rate. See how we have done compared to MMD that day. I have just been given a resolution. I'm not sure what I'm supposed to do with the resolution. Nothing. To remind us that we have already passed the resolution, I believe. But we will see how this goes, and look forward actually to having a very successful sale. All the signs are that we will do extremely well, but we will know a week from today. And with that, I would like to recognize the fact, as I think you all have recognized, that actually there are two people sitting in the front row there who know what they're talking about. The Chief Deputy Treasurer, Bernadette Benick, and our State Director of Debt Management, Patty Conrad, to whom I would address all questions.
Patty, does she cover it?
One thing I've learned in 67 years is how to read.
Mr. Comptroller.
If I could just ask Patty, what is Treasurer did an excellent job and answered a lot of my questions, but what do you anticipate being the approximate interest rate for these certificates, I guess, rather than...
We just ran numbers yesterday. These are 5-year maturities. That's the expected life of a VLT. And so we've matched the asset with the liability. We're planning to issue these COPs serially, which means that we will be maturing each year. The first principal payment will be September of 2011, and the last one will be September of 2015. The maturity that is September of 2011 has a coupon of 0.9%, and out in 2015, 5 years, 3.01%. Those numbers were updated as of yesterday. Anyone who's been following the markets, they have been quite volatile since the beginning of November, and rates have gone up both on treasuries and tax exempts. These are taxable certificates of participation because of the private activity that's involved with them. They're taxable federal and taxable state.
And so what would we anticipate if they were just normal bonded debt?
If they were tax exempt?
Right.
Well, something less than that.
Sure.
Certainly. I don't have those exact numbers. I didn't run them that way. I ran them only as taxable. But they would definitely be less as tax exempt.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to get $41.5 million. Do you have any idea of how many slot machines we're going to get with this and what the timeline is?
We do. The
acquisition and delivery, I guess.
Perryville is authorized for $1,500, and we are going to finance $1,233. Not all of the machines are going to be owned by the state of Maryland. Some of them are leased, and so that represents the number that will be owned by the state and financed by the state. At Perryville, it's authorized for $750, and we are financing $592.
Mean Ocean Downs.
I'm sorry.
Ocean Downs is the second.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
And that's going to be done this calendar year.
Ocean Downs, as I'm sure everyone knows, opened on the 4th.
I was there.
Yeah.
And Alessandra had the first play.
Both. The state has a 90-day acceptance period once these facilities open, at which point they can swap some machines depending on the popularity, as I understand it anyway, the popularity of the machines. At the end of the 90 days, the state accepts the machines that are there, and then there's a 30-day period to pay the invoice, which is why Perryville opened on September 27th. We will close this transaction on January 20th and have the invoices paid by January 26th when they're due. And so for Ocean Downs, we expect to pay those invoices on or about May 3rd. With the proceeds.
Thank you, Governor. Madam Treasurer, thank you for this. I think it's, I'm going to vote for this, even though everyone knows I'm opposed to this whole concept, but I think this financing plan is well presented and well briefed for us, and I'm going to support it, and thank you for answering my questions.
Thank you, Governor.
Governor, I'm not in the business, I hope, of embarrassing people, but we say very good and absolutely true things about people while they're leaving. I would just like to say, as an outstanding example of a state leader, Patty Conrad, who I hope is not leaving, is just a prime example, a model of hard work, great intelligence, creativity, and dedication that is just truly outstanding, and I haven't had, we've all worked with her for some time, but I haven't had the opportunity to say this publicly, and I do want to thank you, Madam
Treasurer.
Again, like Mr. Colmer's, there are actions taken by many people because we have great trust in the fact that they have been thoroughly examined, weighed with an understanding of priorities and principles, and based on recommendations of people.
Thank you for your leadership and your vision, the board's vision. It makes it very clear for people who are working for you as to what direction we should be heading. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Conrad. Thank you also for your great taste in music. Any other questions on the Secretary's agenda? Treasurer moves yes. Seconded by the Comptroller. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed, nay. The ayes have it. We now move on to the...
Thank you, Peter.
...the program open space. Right.
Morning, Governor.
Morning.
Your Comptroller, Department of Natural Resources has three items on the Secretary's agenda today. All three items are looking at the program open space projects. I'd be happy to take any questions you might have regarding those projects.
Okay.
Great project. One Maryland.
Comptroller moves approval, seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed, nay. The ayes have it. We now move on to the Department of Budget and Management.
Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, good morning. There are seven items on the Department of Budget and Management's agenda for the day, and I'll be happy to answer your questions.
Questions? Mr. Comptroller?
Item 2S, is Mr. Martino here? Or?
Mr. Martino is here. Item 2S is the contract to provide televised drawings on the lottery's online games.
How are you, Mr. Comptroller?
Excellent.
I grew my beard in hopes that you wouldn't be able to recognize me.
Yeah. Well, it's good to see you. And I do have a question about this. It's a kind of a technical question. I noticed that this is not going to the low bidder, and I understand that process is how you defend that, and I think that many instances make sense. But can you just help me understand exactly what the benefit is from a technical standpoint? I take it that WBAL is going to maintain the current airtime of the lottery's drawings. How important is that?
That's correct. The two most important items on our technical evaluation of the two bidders was proposed airtime was actually number one, and audience delivery was number two. In the area of proposed airtime, the other applicant or other bidder had suggested moving the evening pick three, pick four, and multi-match drawing from the 8 o'clock hour, which airs just right before prime time, to into the 10 o'clock hour, doing their news broadcast at a significantly lower rating. And it was the decision and judgment of our sales team, and our sales director, Mr. Ringgold, was actually on the evaluation team, that this would significantly and negatively impact our sales by moving the draw times, because lottery players who play those particular games are creatures of habit, and that by moving it from the 8 o'clock, which it is traditionally run, I believe, since the drawings have been aired, to a much later time, would have a negative impact on our sales, and ultimately a negative impact on the revenue to the state.
So it's a larger segment of players are going to see it.
Correct.
Okay. And then what else are you doing to compensate for your advertising budget being reduced? Have you got innovative partnerships? What are you doing to attract new players?
Well, I would argue first and foremost that this contract and the reason why we chose not to exercise the two-year renewable option that was on the existing contract with WBAL and instead go out for procurement was a nod towards, you know, the reduction in our advertising budget that's occurred over the last 2 years, because the saving, the annual savings by going to this contract as opposed to the one that we had before is $1.325 million a year. Under the current contract that we had an advertising commitment to WBAL TV, WBAL Radio, and 98 Rock of $2.5 million a year. Now we are only paying for the airtime of the drawings, and we've elected under our scheme not to air one of the drawings, Bonus Match 5, anymore, and that's going to come out annually to $1.175 million. So that's a significant cost savings. In addition, you know, we engage in partnerships all the time. I think, you know, I would highlight one right now which has been particularly successful, and that's with the Baltimore Ravens, our Ravens Cash Fantasy Ticket. Not only do we, you know, partner and are able to use their logos throughout the course of the year, selling a ticket that launched in August and has now had over 95% activation, we obviously have the same type of relationship with the or have a relationship with the Baltimore Orioles. But, you know, this contract will allow us to save money and use it to advertise at times that most benefit the lottery. And I would point out that last night was a perfect example of when we massively increased our advertising with the second highest Mega Millions jackpot in the history of the game at $355 million advertised. We were able to deploy resources on television, on radio, through our internet, that allowed us to sell $5 million of Mega Millions tickets yesterday.
Governor and I do well or not? Any luck? Did they find a winner?
They did. Unfortunately, they were in the states of Idaho and Washington. Yeah. So.
Thank you for that. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Any other questions on Department of Budget?
Mr. Martino, can I just Very briefly, I appreciate your looking into an incident that we raised with you yesterday, but why do you need the Social Security number of
because individuals who have lottery winnings in excess of $600 have to be issued a W-2G tax form for their income tax because that is declarable winnings for federal income tax purposes.
Okay.
And
thank you. No, I understand that. Very good. Thank you. I didn't mean anything.
Is there any way that you, when those things happen, is there any way you, I guess you don't want to put on a website who the, you don't know who the winners are.
Like the Mega Millions winners?
Yeah, I don't know. Is there any, we're just, the incident we're talking about is somebody feeling like they were being scammed.
The problem was that parents of a friend of mine got a letter in the mail saying, you might have won something, please send us your Social Security number. And the daughter thought, aha, that's a real scam. And then we investigated and found out that, in fact, it may not have been. I mean, but it certainly looks like one, the way that communications was sent. And I would just urge you to think about it, because we don't want people scammed. And it came, I gather, from an official-looking stationery, but anybody can print official-looking stationery and can even use the name of somebody at the agency. If there were a way for a person to individually call in or use the Internet to raise a question themselves as opposed to simply responding, as there are with some sites, you know, which say, don't respond to this, please go here and inquire.
Well, the incident that you have mentioned, which was forwarded to
us by
your office.
And I don't know anything more about it than you do.
Our office, we're looking into right now. Yeah. In fact, I think the individuals made contact with my office and we're investigating it. What I would say is that it's probably a highly unusual case where someone would be asked for this information where they didn't know that they were a winner, and so that's why we need to look into this. If someone perhaps, it came through our subscriptions office, so in case, it's possible that someone may have purchased a subscription for them, if in fact that's what happened, but it appears on first blush to be legitimate, but we're going to look into it.
But
and certainly
at any rate, I'm not talking about the specific instance,
right,
but just in general, this process, just to make sure that we're not doing anything inadvertently to allow people to scam other people or to make it easier for them, and that we are doing everything we can to make it more difficult.
And I would just, again, not knowing exactly the particulars about this, I would say the overwhelming majority of time, people who are being asked to provide that number are doing so because they know
right.
they're presenting a winning prize of or claiming something in excess of $600, so they're the money is being transferred at the same time.
Okay. Any other questions on the part of Mr. Comptroller?
Item 7. Is there someone that can explain that?
Yes.
Good morning. Philip Pickus, Assistant Attorney General. Good morning, Mr. Treasurer.
Just tell us what we're doing with this item, please.
This was a litigation case, a federal civil rights action against the Maryland State Police and several officers. A DWI arrest was made of a woman, and she was handcuffed from behind. She was placed in the Maryland State Police car, and she exited the vehicle. The police attempted to put a further restraint device on her, and while that was happening, she fell, landed on her face, and lost her two front teeth. We decided to go to mediation on this. We had a mediation session in front of U.S. Magistrate Judge Gesner. She indicated that she thinks it's in the best interest of the state to settle this case. We were very far apart, and we eventually reached the number of 32,000, which we concluded was in the best interest of the state, considering that we were looking at significant dental bills. And because this was a 1983 claim, we were also looking at the possibility of attorney fees. In fact, Judge Gesner noted to us she was surprised that we were able to settle the case at such a low number.
And when you're, I appreciate that, and when you're doing these negotiations, do you keep in mind what the history of previous suits similar to this are involving the same plaintiff and involving the same attorney?
Absolutely.
And because there's some tension here, I think, between obviously resolving the case for a relatively small amount of money, and obviously this is not a large item typical of what comes before us, but the tension is between that and not stopping what some people call a cottage industry of producing these lawsuits in great number and getting settlements along the lines of what you're presenting to us, which is, hey, this is a way for us to get out of this without paying lawyers' fees. How do you protect the taxpayer against an abuse of the system by repeated cases done almost assembly line? And I'm not alleging that's the case here, but did you look at it at that in this instance, and do you in other cases?
Absolutely, that's 100% a factor in every case. When we settle, we get as much information on the plaintiff as we possibly can, and that's taken into consideration when we make a settlement decision. As this particular plaintiff is concerned, we were only aware of one prior case against the Harford County Sheriff's Office. They settled that case. There was no injury in that case. My understanding is it was a false arrest sort of case. In this case, we're not dealing with some kind of speculative injuries. We have two front teeth knocked out of the arrestee in police custody. So it wasn't a question of soft tissue injuries where we can speculate to the extent of her injuries. So in the confines of this case, I honestly cannot say that this is one of those cases where a plaintiff came looking for trouble. If she did, she threw herself on the ground and purposely knocked out her front teeth, and I just have trouble believing that.
And there's... Excuse me? So there's one prior case.
Yes.
And does this plaintiff and her attorney, are they in an employment situation? Does she work for the lawyer?
Not that I'm aware of.
Well, I'm going to support it, but I hope that you continue to be vigilant on protecting the state from anything that might be challenged as far as an ethical situation of these suits. And I agree with you, there was damage here, but obviously there was a lot of allegations about intoxication, inebriation, and belligerence, and resistance. You know, there was a lot in this, and there's no allegation that any of our troopers did anything wrong from our findings. So I just want to make sure you guys are not just avoiding litigation and creating more impetus for something that we regret down the road. It's a difficult situation, I agree with you, given the injury to the plaintiff.
I'd like to just briefly address that issue you raised concerning settlement policy and the risk of sort of serial plaintiffs, attorneys making the cottage industry of suing the state. We see no evidence of that. We go back through on a regular basis the board meetings from previous years to see where settlements fit in. And, of course, this board sees all settlements of this type, and I think the board would, first and most significantly, this board is a check on that sort of practice.
Wasn't there an ACLU case that came to
there was an ACLU settlement? Case,
and
Governor.
How much were we asked for at the time? Do you remember this one?
No. I remember it well, and I think the board exercised its authority to...
Liz, do you remember how much that one was, Ms. Harris?
I do.
I bet Mr. Howard.
Do you remember?
I do.
Well, how much was that?
The request was for $60,000 in attorney's fees in a case where there was virtually no work done by the plaintiff's attorneys, and the allegations were had some merit back in 2006, but were promptly corrected voluntarily by the state. I apologize for interrupting Phil.
We didn't, approve that one. We didn't approve that one. I was just reminding the board. And it was $60,000 we saved by not approving that one.
I well remember that. And let me mention something about that since the board rejected that. And I came down and addressed it and restated what was in the memo provided by the board. It's a good example of the board exercising its authority because it went back to the judge and he awarded $0 in attorney's fees. We're careful not to bring down attorney's fees settlements that we don't think we can really go to the wall on, and I don't think we did on that one. A couple other real quick points. I don't want to belabor this item. The attorney in this case was not someone who has sued the state, to our knowledge, before. So this attorney for this plaintiff is not in that category. And the other thing I would mention, there's additional facts in the settlement memorandum provided to the board, one of which is that this person, after broke her teeth and was in an additional police restraints, was pepper sprayed by the officers when she was incapacitated and bleeding. So there were some, and there are additional very difficult facts. So I would just say, from my perspective, we hate settlement cases, but this is a very good settlement of a case that, without a cap.
What's the jurisdiction?
Federal court.
Was it Harper? The case happened in Harford County. The jurisdiction was the U.S. Federal Court.
No, thank you for that. I just raised the issue. And, Governor, thank you for reminding me of that great vote we took. Keep our elbows up.
We will. Thank you.
All right. The Comptroller moves approval, seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. We move on now to the Department of Information Technology, I do believe, don't we? No, I'm sorry. I spoke too soon, Elliot.
University.
The University System of Maryland.
Another set of energy-saving projects.
Now, Kiplinger's just came out with their top-ranked universities in America again, didn't they?
I'm not aware of that.
They did just the other day. There were five of them. One of them was St. Mary's. One of them was Salisbury. Was one of them College Park? Yes, Takira. College Park was another. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And Towson was another. That's four. UMBC. That's the fifth. I mentioned Salisbury.
All five. Good morning, Governor, members of the board. I'm Jim Sterling for the University System of Maryland. We have 11 items on today's agenda. I'd be happy to address any questions.
No questions? No. Controller moves approval, seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed, nay. The ayes have it. Well done.
Thank you, Chair. Now
get to go to the Department of Information Technology, welcoming back to the podium for the first time in a brand new year, Secretary Elliot Schlanger.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, and let me tell you, it is great to be back, believe me. Anyway, L.A. Schlanger, Department of Information Technology, we have two items on the agenda this morning, and I'll be happy to address any questions at this time.
Any questions? Controller moves approval, seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye.
But it is good to have you back.
Thank you.
The ayes have it. Passes. We move on now to the Department of General Services.
Sir. Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, the Department of General Services has 13 items on our agenda. I'll be glad to answer any questions you have about any of these items.
Any questions? Treasurer moves approval, seconded by the Comptroller. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it, and that concludes our meeting. Thank you all very, very much. I don't know. Do we have any fun? We can probably bring one up. Takira. Can you see if Jay Baker...